Here we are. It's happening.
All the magic is back. It's electric in here right now.
The excitement in the air.
I'm still thinking about what we were talking about before we went on the air. That's Ryan and I's.
Oh, our new
open mic duo. We haven't named it yet.
But we duetted on O'Sherry.
O'Sherry.
Steve Perry post Journey project.
Well, I don't think it was post Journey. I think it was like in the middle. I think like it was, you know, in the middle of their run to superstar when they had their own video
game. O'Sherry success
to leave, possibly so. But I think like it was something like he was like, God damn it, the rest of you guys in Journey, I need my own outlet to sing songs that sound exactly like Journey. And then stormed out and slammed the door.
I gotta say about that song, depth. A lot of depth in that song.
What do you mean?
Well, it's deep, you know. O'Sherry, you're all alone. Hold on. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Well, that's Steve Perry. I mean, we've recently even listened to Separate Ways.
That is true.
Yeah. Air keys.
Air keyboards from via Mr. Perry.
Air drums. There's like a Wonder Woman, you know, like X thing he doesn't. All right. Whatever. Let's do this thing. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Mark.
I'm Kevin.
Somebody likes it.
So we're back, and Shane has just sampled a Japanese Snickers bar.
Black pepper Snickers.
Black pepper Snickers.
So we can await the slew of email that we'll get from Tokyo.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. On our hot take on hot Snickers bars.
I'm going to state for the record, my record at least, that was a damn tasty candy bar. But I like weird... I mean, stuff off the beaten path.
This entire side of the table is kind of like that. And I don't really like nuts per se, but like I'm really intrigued.
I saved some for you. I think at some point, if you were drinking tonight, I'd get you drunk enough to give you some.
I am drinking. I've got vodka in this here.
Oh,
LaCroix.
There's vodka in that. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then I'll wait till that drink goes from here to here, and then I'll try to sell the black pepper Snickers on you.
Well, I appreciate that.
It's quite tasty.
Burt Reynolds is dead.
That's what I was going to say. You didn't even let me. God damn it. I've been waiting all week. I had this whole build-up.
Step on your punchline with the
it's
news?
It's not a punchline. It's just I've been waiting all week to sell this celebrity death
watch. Well, now's your chance. Go ahead.
No.
Oh, well, cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, cat's out of the bag. Yeah, Burt Reynolds died.
Our entire listening audience had no idea that Burt Reynolds was dead.
yeah, that's the point.
It's been a tightly kept secret. But in fact, yeah.
The thing that I thought was really fascinating that came out of Burt Reynolds' passing, one thing that I probably at some point suspected but didn't know for sure until this past week was that apparently... The entire reason that Celebrity Jeopardy exists as a thing on SNL was just an excuse for Norm MacDonald to do a shitty Burt Reynolds impression.
Totally.
Like,
and he picked like the most iconic of Burt Reynolds, you know, phases.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know wise ass late 70s.
I have no idea. Like, I know that apparently the word was that they just built this whole sketch around him being a jackass in a giant cowboy hat and chomping gum the entire time.
Turd Ferguson.
And then, apparently, Reynolds was supposed to come on the next year and was going to do like a cameo, but Norm MacDonald had been fired by then. So a lot of those recurring bits will have an endpoint and it almost always ends the same way, which is like whoever it is that they're lampooning comes on and then it's, you know, it kind of takes the wind out of the sails of the joke. But nope, that thing went on for years, and it was all because Homeboy wanted to do his Turd Ferguson. But that's not why we're here.
We're here for something else. Glasgowegian.
Yes, no, so we're going to talk about a band in this show that ostensibly Kurt Cobain called the greatest band in the world, and Liam Gallagher called the second greatest band in the world.
After his own.
After, yes, of course, after his own. Right. So, and we're talking about, of course, Teenage Fan Club. And so their story, I'm always fascinated by bands who are able to kind of mostly keep it together.
Well, there's like three dudes who are the core of the band.
Right. They've had a little bit of a Spinal Tap situation with drummers. They're not dead, but I mean, like, they just keep leaving.
It's all a gardening accident.
Right, exactly. Yes. So, anyway, I suspected when I first brought this up that just given the musical predilections of some of the people who are on the show, that there would be, that maybe if I chose something out of the canon of this band, that everybody would know it. But turns out we all kind of know Bandwagon-esque, but we didn't necessarily all know the rest of the catalog.
That is true.
And so I chose Grand Prix, which is their 1995 release and their fifth studio album.
Yeah, two records after Bandwagon-esque. And apparently the one that came in between the two wasn't all that great, and it kind of lost the momentum in the States.
Well, we can talk about that, but... But yeah, that record 13, the record that came in between Bandwagon-esque and Teenage Fan Club, was this was essentially them kind of reclaiming their sound, I think, to a certain extent. And it performed really well in the UK, but did not perform as well. They didn't make up the ground that they lost on 13 in the States. So it's another one of these. I don't know if Teenage Fan Club ends up being another one of these bands that a lot of people who are in great bands really love, which clearly seems to have been the case. For a period of time. Shane?
There's some really, really good songs on this record.
There's some good songs on it, but they're all the same tempo.
That's the thing. Like, everything sounds like it breaks up a little bit, but for the most part, like, I mean, it's a pleasant
The stuff
that
has the arpeggios on it, of course.
There's some piano on some of it. There's an acoustic on a couple of them, but for the most part, it's just, I'm just not a power pop guy, even though on paper I should be.
Yes, but no, these are the guys who like worship Big Star.
Well, so I do think that it's interesting that Shane makes a point that it's a pleasant album. Because there are a lot of things that we have listened to and covered and things that get bandied about, like this is a sort of extreme example, but like take Rumors, where there are rampant breakups happening across the band, many of them within the, like, a couple of times over within the band, and they put out that record that's full of consternation and sort of, there's a lot of tension in those songs.
There's a lot of variation in those songs too,
well,
though.
Well, that's fine. Yeah. I'm still getting the point, but the bottom line here is that this is a record where Norman Blake fell in love with his wife, and so that actually propelled a lot of the songwriting.
She was the housekeeping person.
She's,
I think,
Canadian. Yeah,
no, like in the studio they were recording.
That's true. She was. Yeah, that too.
Not that really matters. It's just an interesting aside.
It doesn't probably matter that she's Canadian either, but
it's a solid record. It's just there's not a ton of songs that stand out that you... It's melodic, but it's not melodic in a way that is, like, catchy. Does that make sense? Like, there's a couple songs on this record, in my opinion, that are fucking badass. But for the most part, especially considering, like, they're all the same tempo, they're all the same this, that, like...
Well, and
that's power pop in general.
Like, and they're good harmonies, but they're the same good harmonies, like, all over the record.
Correct.
Well, I will challenge you to come up with, like, even if that is your maintained perspective for the rest of the show, to come up with other things to say. Because I do think that, like, the backstory on this album is pretty interesting. You know, there's the whole demise of creation and that whole thing, and the fact that even though that label was getting ready to go
Billy up.
Yeah. You put it nicer than I was gonna, but yeah, like they got signed to a 2-record deal, basically setting them up to get paid again on another album release after this one, even knowing and basically it's just a testament to the fact that the, you know, they were good friends with the label director.
Well, unfortunately, Loveless happened, and even with the success of Maybe.
They spin themselves into the ground with Loveless?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, and then, of course, there was also the there was the whole thing where, was it Spin? That
Spin named them, Bandwagon-esque was album of the year.
Over Nevermind.
Yeah, Nevermind, and Out of Time by R.E.M., and there's
and Loveless.
Yeah, and Loveless.
Yeah. Yeah, so the funny story about that, I guess, to a certain extent, is that apparently the guy who was running, you know, basically had a hand in making sure that, or settling the, you know, how things got ranked at the end of that that magazine article, was somebody that they knew who was used to be a drummer in Scotland. So they were like,
so they had a thumb on the scare.
It sounds like, at the very least, like one of their mates like really loved that band.
Solid?
Yeah, well, I don't know if he did him a solid. I mean, it sounds like it could be that he genuinely loved that band. At the very least, like, they published what they published and stood behind it. But
you remember how like much sway that Kurt Cobain used to have when he would just like bring up bands like the Raincoats, and it was like
Vaseline's,
Captain America, which later became Eugenius. I only know about those bands because of Kurt Cobain.
Oh, Eugenius, man, I forgot about that band.
They were pretty good.
Yeah, what's up? 1992? Also Scotland. Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, you guys want to get into a track?
Yeah, let's try and let's. Why don't we do what is arguably the single? Let's play Sparky's Dream.
That's a good one.
Oh, that song?
Yeah.
No, it's fantastic.
No, I think that holds up.
I love that song.
I think it holds up pretty well with the rest of their material.
Agreed. Yeah, I really
I
like
feel
that.
Like this record, the first time I listened to it, was super samey, and it definitely is one of the most rewards after subsequent listens of, you know, many of the shit that we've done that we've said. Like, I like this album so much more. The third time I listened, because the second time I listened to it, I was like, oh yeah, I like a lot of these songs a lot more. Because the first time through, it was just like a wash of beige to me.
Let me ask you this: do you think it would have benefited from like better mixing? Like, I think the production's good, but I feel like there's some dynamics, like the distorted guitar.
It just
on
sounds
that.
Like the like, same song. A lot of the songs.
I feel like, you know, maybe they could have done some dynamic shifts. That
yeah. Yes. And
the songs are solid.
Yeah, the songs are pretty much all really good. Like, that's a good point. I mean, maybe it could have. It's definitely like a certain sound that is not necessarily my sound.
And I'll bet if I saw like this entire record performed live, it would be badass.
Right, because you'd probably hear a lot more dynamic, like the dynamic stuff for sure. Like,
mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing to me about the samey stuff is that you can't fix that with sequencing. It's like you can't, if the songs sound the way they sound, they all sort of sound like they bleed together. Like, does the order matter? I would argue that like the first couple of tracks, I think, set the rest of the record up reasonably well. I do think it's got some of its uneven spots, and maybe the sequencing, you know. Which can be super important when it works, isn't that important?
A few of the tracks are just great, and some of them are just kind of boring, and like that, and that's fine.
I didn't
like
connect with all of them either, but the ones like that, I mean, that song in particular, I feel like holds up really well, even against any.
Did you see that there's a dad joke in the track listing?
No, I didn't see that there's a dad.
Neil Young.
Oh yeah, there is that is a dad joke. Well, isn't
as soon
it?
As,
yeah.
I love as soon as you said dad joke in the track listing, Kevin like immediately leaned into his computer.
Oh,
no,
his eyes light up.
His eyes get big. Like, no, I did not see that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the song, that song's actually great too. But I think, but anyway, the thing that strikes me about Sparky's Dream in particular is that the harmonies are very distinct. Like the way that they sort of overlap each other on their.
There's a lot of
other.
Interesting stuff. I thought that was. I definitely the first time I heard it, I was like, this song is so great. And the second time I was like, this sounds like Matthew Sweet.
Matthew Sweet falls firmly in the
power pop yeah.
canon.
Yeah.
And I saw him live, and he was fantastic.
Yeah, see, I think you're right completely. And again, like don't get me wrong. Like, it's not like I don't like this stuff. There's some songs. There's a song later in the album. I think it's Say No. It's like an acoustic song. It really breaks it up. And I love that song.
I did think it was kind of, this is... talking about this kind of illustrated to me, like, one of the things I was reading about Teenage Fan Club is like when they put out 13, the record that didn't do as well, that came out on Geffen, and so there was like a lot of money behind it, and it was like a little bit of an awkward fit, and apparently the design department at Geffen, somebody, the designer they put them with, said, I think I've got a really great idea for your album cover, and they said, all right, well, go ahead and go away and do whatever you want to do. And he came back with, like, basically it was like apparently like an image of like a crying teenage girl, and the mascara had like smudged out into a 13 on her shirt. And they were like, well, that's not really what our music sounds like.
Maybe not.
Like,
maybe not.
And they were apparently trying to also market it to teenage girls, which is like, I get maybe a little bit of the.
They have a lot
Sunny
of little
pop.
Minor key stuff, like, yeah. in there with the harmonies and shit. I love the cover of 13. It's an album I've never heard before.
Yeah, well, that's...
What it eventually became.
Is that a golf ball?
It's volleyball. Like a volleyball.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a volleyball. All right.
Anyway, but basically, so they came to the guy comes to the band with that concept, and he's like, here's your album cover. And they're like, well, that's not really what the band's all about. And they're like... Well, the guy says, the designer says, well, if you don't agree to it, then I don't think that there's a chance that Geffen won't promote the record. And basically they said, well, fuck you then. And so
rest is history.
So that was not, and apparently the band ended up having to pay the label back about 10 grand because they went out and hired a really high end photographer and did a bunch of other stuff. But
and record contracts are historically like bad. Like, if you take, you know, like
right.
actors or writers or you know, bands or whatever, like, bands get the worst contracts.
Oh, but, yeah.
I do like the cover art for Grand Prix, though. Like,
yeah, that's good.
It's like, it's like a ground level, you know, rendering of
an
F1 car, yeah. and it's just done in black and white. And anyway, I thought whoever did that, good job.
Fan Club on the, I don't know. Anybody that...
It's the front wing, Shane.
Yeah. Mark, you
of
would
course,
know that
course,
stuff.
Of course
I'll bet you
know
F1
that.
Stuff it's way better.
I watch F1 every weekend, my friends.
There you go. Yeah. There they are, turning left.
Hey, yep. you guys, I just want to point one thing
I
out.
I think that's IndyCar, Kevin,
yeah.
where they just turn left.
Formula One.
Also right.
Lots of corners.
Okay.
They were talking about, paid an extra $10,000 to get a photographer. Remember when bands had, our labels had money? Lots and lots
no,
of
lots.
Money.
I don't remember.
And they just do like mountains of coke in conference rooms. And
yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's not
yeah,
as
that
much.
Doesn't.
They used to groom bands, you know, like,
well, they used
sign
to
them
bidding
and then
wars
they'd put out a couple records that didn't do so well. And then the third one hit and they'd have, you know, it's like a farm league or whatever. But now, like,
no.
Nope.
Yeah, thanks, Spotify. Don't get me wrong.
I know I use Spotify. I feel kind of bad about it all the time, but still, it's best for the consumer.
It's pretty bad, though.
There was somebody, God, maybe it was, might have been Jason, the country artist.
Isbell?
Isbell. Yeah, somebody was saying, I don't know, he had this, we don't. The reason for it is not really the important thing. The punchline's the only thing I care about. But it, like, apparently he took a stand on something that somebody said that they're gonna take all of his songs out of their Spotify queue, and his they put that up on Twitter, and he tweeted back at him and said, "I'm really gonna miss that 0.5 cents or whatever it was." Yeah, that is like
about
Shane. Do you get checks from Spotify?
No, I don't get them directly, but they go well. I don't
get checks.
Do
they go through ASCAP?
No, I get. I don't know. I get them occasionally through another company that I use, but it's. Yes, there's definitely royalties.
It's ASCAP. Like 13 cents.
Yeah, no, it was $8 last quarter.
Oh, yeah. For a quarter of the year?
Yes.
And you're raking it in.
There you go.
Damn, man, rock and roll lifestyle.
I used to get quarterly checks. I had a deal with Muzak for several years, and I could count on my quarterly $11 check.
And there's a lot of fucking elevators in this country playing that shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well,
Muzak does a lot more than just elevator music, but that is what they're known for.
In Home Depot, they don't do really elevator music anymore. Apparently, in fact, I
only escalator music, which is harder to come by.
That's a different thing.
It's very fleeting.
Escalator music. I don't know if that's right or not.
That's not what I want to hear when I get on an escalator. By the way, dude.
Somebody is that guy swallowing swords? What the hell?
All right, let's do another one of these.
Yeah,
guys.
Let's do another. So let's save your. We'll save the change of pace song for the second half. But let's do. Do you guys want to do? I either want to do the first track or the dad joke.
I'm fine with whatever. My two favorites were Verisimilitude and Going Places, but like, I'm cool with whatever.
All right, let's do. Let's do Neil Young. That I brought this record up in the first place was because I guess that whole catalog or most of the kind of sweet spot of this band's catalog got re-released within the past few months.
I think Pitchfork went back and reevaluated or whatever.
They did, and I was just getting ready to mention that. And they said, I thought this was kind of an interesting takeaway on the guy from Pitchfork's review of all of these records, but Grand Prix in particular. He said that it's that they're inspired and stacked with hooks like Bandwagon-esque, except that they're prioritized differently. Apparently, and the quote is, "It's not music for when you're about to go out.
When you come back
that,
in,
it's music for when you get back in." And I was like, "Well, that probably just means that I'm old." But I was like, "I like music for when I come back. It's like." Now I'm home. Like, I don't have to. There's nothing I have to deal with. Like,
pour yourself a glass of wine and just kind of chill for a little bit.
Yeah.
And get ready for bed.
Yeah. Well, right. It doesn't go that far. But anyway, yeah, I probably told this story on the show before, but years ago, after a few years, like a couple of years after college, when I was still living in the town where I went to school, there was a bar that had. It had Miles Davis Kind of Blue on the
you've brought this up
on the jukebox.
It was making everybody sleepy.
Yes, well, thanks, Ryan. Why don't you just cut to the chase? Anyway, yeah. So it was making everybody sleepy, and I feel like there could be a little bit of that same like kind of get you into a chill place of mind.
Put on your Snuggie.
Yeah, I guess right.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, good song. Like most of the rest of them. I dig it. And Shane, do you have thoughts?
Oh, no, I
you
like
look
it.
Ponderous.
Huh? No, not at all. I'm just listening to you guys. Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the record, I think, taken, like, one at a time. You know, I've said this before about a lot of different acts that we've talked about, but if you put it on a mixtape, you know, not every one of these songs, there's probably half of a great record, I think, on this, but it would stand out. You'd be like, oh, who's that? But taken together, it just sorts of blends into each other.
I have a weird theory. I think that whoever composed and performed the music for Scooby-Doo, like Where Are You, whatever, I think was a Big Star fan. And like, it's not as good as Big Star.
When the fuck have you watched Scooby-Doo, Where Are You recently that you remember
not,
the music?
Not recently. But
how do you remember the music?
Oh, I do remember it because it's power pop. It's watered down power pop for kids. But like,
I can't remember. Well, I can't stand that cartoon anyway, but.
Reggie?
Thank you. I remember that.
Yeah. I don't know. Scoop. I enjoyed it after school.
You want some Scooby snacks?
9-year-old, you know, like, nothing wrong with that.
Anyway, Neil Young is not a song about either Neil Young or Carl Jung.
See, that's the dad in the room. He just waited the whole time for us to, like,
no, it's you guys don't understand. Like, so the thing that what you learn is that you can just ignore things. Like, things can just go, and then when there's time, believe me, I have dealt with a little bit of chaos in my day.
Kevin's really good at kind of putting out little fires all the time. Yeah. I've seen it.
I think parents are that way in general. We don't have kids, so
that I know about.
Anyway, fun fact: apparently, that Neil Young is Norman Blake wrote the song about his good friend Douglas T. Stewart, leader of the Scottish band BMX Bandits.
That's a great band name.
It is kind of a cool band name. I kind of wish that I'd heard anything that they'd put out. But
so, Mark, do you find anything illuminating about Scooby-Doo?
Song was written by Danny Jansen. Also wrote the Partridge Family theme song.
Well, that's a pretty awesome song. It is.
Come on, get happy. Yeah.
It was another song we should put into our open mic.
Yeah, just take your act on the road. All right. Well,
good times.
Are we ready for some intermission?
Do a little middle stuff.
Do a little intermission.
Yeah, let's do it.
Do it.
All right, so I do have the intermission music this week, and I was driving home, I don't know, it was probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it turns out it was like a guest DJ on KUTX.
Is it Saturdays? Because there's the hip-hop show.
Yeah, they have a hip-hop show. But
Confucius and Fresh.
But this guy just kept playing song after song that I like, and I'm not a hip-hop guy, but this song blew me away. And it's by an artist who's actually from Austin. I don't know him at all, but the artist is called Bronze Whale, and the song is called Shrubbery. It doesn't have a proper video, but I just was like, dude, this is hitting me where I live. So let's get into Shrubbery by Bronze Whale. Let's go, let's go. Let me take you for a little ride, we can stroll. Make sure to look out for them hams on patrol. They don't need to know what we doing on the low as we roll through the spot where the green's gonna grow. So everything is everything when we let the evergreen let the smoke in and out and blow. Whoa, feel more replenishing than anything. Mix up with the grenadine, whatever you know. Bad vibes and them sad sides, yeah, they left up at the dough. Everything that's going on here got a nigga lit like a light bulb. When the switch don't real bright to glow. Take the sound, no snow, go pro with some dope dope. Little bit of marshmallow with the cocoa and a chokehold that'll make every single minute of the video flow. Chronic by the bow. I'm feeling like I'm flying in the highest of the highest skies. I know you guys while I'm gliding in the skies. Max lift. Follow y'all in mini minds like a skinny size bronze bitch with chiotic. The laughter is out of control. I don't think there's any way I could get out of this zone. Not all the way there yet, but I'm about to be thrown. Goddamn it, motherfucker, I'm stoned. In other words, soint. Slurring all my sentences I'm trying to put together. I can't even make a point. Me and her anoint. Grab myself a fat ounce, pick the fucking track, bounce, smoke us up a motherfucking joint. Hey, shit, shrimp, saucy style, down home buttery. Couldn't think of living life without all of the shrubbery. If you get high on the drug, let's go. Take it to the sky from the floor, let's go. Feel like my eyes on swirl, let's go. Put them down, I'm on the roll, let's go. If you get high on the drug, let's go. Take it to the sky from the floor, let's go. So there's a
there's a startup that has a, there's a transcribing service where basically you can, you could upload lyrics, and I kind of want to think, I think we should do this. Like,
put it to
you
the test.
You could upload the entire text of the show, or like the entire, what, the entire, whatever, the MP3 of the show or whatever, and it'll transcribe the entire broadcast, whatever. And reporters use this all the time. But I'd be really fascinated.
You'd have to understand that song.
Well, and it's like, if it's wrong, like, who would know? Like, maybe that guy would know. But, like, that would be about it.
Man, those are some vocal gymnastics, man. Like, that's Crazy Town stuff. Like, it's...
Yeah.
I love it.
There's a lot going on. Plus, it's like the background music is, like, drum and bass. So that's already, like, sped up and, you know...
Yeah, apparently whoever wrote their bio calls them an indie electronic duo. Comprised of Austin natives Aaron Jacques and Benny Alley. Like, I'd never heard of them before I heard that. And I thought it was going to be like one of these things where it's, you know, giant popular and I just am behind the curve. But no, like, they're kind of just getting started, I guess. They're
here in town?
Yeah. They formed in 2011, but under the radar would probably be an apt description. But
well,
the
hip hop scene is starting to take hold here in town. Like, it's really for the first time. I mean, I've been here for a long time, and it's really flourishing right now. So,
yeah, like Austin traditionally has just been like a rock town and like kind of lagged behind in rap and hip hop. But I think that song can hang with anybody.
Yeah, that was great. It reminds me of many, many years ago, I took Derek Morris to see a bus driver show, and he looked at me like three songs in. The guy has a really fast flow like that. Like, that reminded me of Bus Driver, but like Big Boy, but like faster than Big Boy, you know? Like
faster than just about anybody. Like, yeah. And then, like, that, you did bring up the one word that I would take to describe that song, flow.
Like, yeah, well, so we went. So I took Derek to see Bus Driver, and like about three songs in, he looked at me and he goes, "Is this guy a fucking robot?" Like,
I don't know how they do it. Like, presumably he has those lyrics memorized or is reading them off, but that was really fast.
It was really fast and good. I'm a sucker for a good drum and bass. Don't get to hear it that much these days. So
good drum and bass. It almost sounds like an oxymoron. But
you're wrong.
Yeah. Well, not See, usually my cup
never,
of tea.
That's why I've never once brought on an electronic record or a dance record, because that would be that the whole time. I'd just be getting buried, like, you know.
I like the first Prodigy record.
Okay, Ryan.
All right.
Why don't we?
I have lots of black friends.
Why don't we move back on back to south. The show?
Yeah, they get started south. Unsurprisingly, we're talking about the album Grand Prix from a band that goes by Teenage Fan Club, or the Fannies, apparently, as their fans have been.
Oh, is that like their
them.
Matt's thing, like with the Replacements?
I guess so. Yeah. So
knowing what that means in Scotland, that
I was just very unfortunate.
Mark looked horrified.
It's very.
You'd be censored on BBC.
It means something very different than Fanny does. In the States.
I would hope so.
In the States, look at me. I'm worldly.
That's true.
Yeah.
You've gone global, Shane.
Anyway, yeah. Apparently they're nicknamed the Fannies. But the BBC, unsurprisingly, enjoyed this record. The guy that reviewed the album for the BBC said, and they re-reviewed it in 2008. I'm not sure why. Maybe it came back out in England during that time, but... Anyway, he says, Teenage Fan Club remained Britain's most famous underachievers, critically feted for 1991's Bandwagon-esque LP, famously chosen as Spin Magazine's Album of the Year, beating Nirvana's Nevermind. They've since steadfastly failed to break through into the mainstream. 1995's Grand Prix remains their high watermark. Released at the height of Britpop, it was criminally overlooked for the likes of Echo Belly and, lest we forget, Menswear.
yeah. I had forgotten.
Yes, yeah. I had forgotten.
Right, exactly. As it should be. Yeah, I put that in italics when I was reading through this because I was like, holy shit. But anyway, yeah, you'd struggle to find a more perfect pop album than this. For 42 breathless minutes, it condenses, according to this reviewer, the best of the Byrds, Big Star, and early Beach Boys into 13 sun-drenched tracks. Now, I know, basically because we did the first half of the show, that you guys don't necessarily agree with that assessment across the board, but you've had a little bit of time to soak it in, you know?
It's a solid record.
Yeah, it's solid.
It's one of those things where, like, it seems like the some of its parts don't add up to more. Like, I like them on their own, but I don't necessarily want to listen to a whole record over at the same time.
If this album were an EP and they took the five best songs of this record, it would be like a fucking slam dunk.
Legendary.
Like 30. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, as it is, it's a solid, fine listen. Like, solid. It's solid.
Totally.
Like, it's not transcendent.
I feel bad, like, not
that matters.
Liking it
not
more.
Not every record needs to be transcendent.
Whatever.
But.
Yeah. But, yeah, the dudes seem to, you know, get along well enough, and they're still a band. And
they get along, and they're still a band.
Well, dude, I mean,
Jesus.
You say that, but Jesus, like,
set a drink on them.
That most bands don't last all that long.
No, that's true, and I do think that it is kind of interesting. It's like I don't know what there's a secret sauce to like what keeps certain bands together
well,
at a high
all
level.
All three of them sing
long
lead
time.
On it. They all sound like each other.
Well, I do think that's so. True. We haven't really talked about that, and I do think that maybe with this act is a little bit of their secret sauce, right? Like
they all write.
They take turns singing stuff.
You keep talking about secret sauce, but that's what you get at McDonald's. Am I right here?
I think that's just Thousand Island dressing.
Well, yeah, and that's really it's probably more a verbal crutch than anything, but I feel like that's a little of the zeitgeist of this act. Like, what makes them who they are. That they, you know, it's like...
They're probably just like, cool bros who dig hanging out with each other and they figure out a way to monetize it.
Maybe. I'm sure there's certainly some of that that's true.
Right. Like, that's some cynical bullshit that just came out of your mouth.
Could be.
Years ago... Well, at least it's different. But years ago... years ago, there was a Klosterman interviewed Radiohead. And part of the article... had to do with the way that they record, which is to say that Tom York would go off and write songs on piano, and the other guys would go off after he gave them this like kind of bare bones piano track, and they would, all being virtuoso musicians, go do their own thing, and they would come back in and lay the tracks down together, having essentially composed their own parts separately. Now, for that band, that worked that way. Nobody ends up getting, and it sounds like the Teenage Fan Club guys, like the Chord 3, are just too like kind of happy and fine with how things are to really get into like what their process is. But I do find myself kind of wondering, like maybe because they share the load a little bit, maybe that just makes it easier to keep doing what you're doing and not feel like you a bunch of pressure to put something else out.
There's something to be said for that, and I agree on some things. I think it's fascinating that they have three songwriters because let me tell you,
every songwriter
ends up being like the core quarterback of whatever project.
Every songwriter, when they put their song out, maybe this is an early established thing with them. When they bring their song, they know how they want that song to sound. They know how they want it arranged for the most part. And there's lots of fights because everybody wants their own sound for every. So have three guys.
My suspicion is that they all are kind of just on the same page.
So
like
Shane,
they write similar songs to each other.
Is it that, or are you saying that every single song is a compromise?
Ooh. It's always a compromise.
That makes sense as an answer.
Yeah, like, it's a complete. But I mean, there are some things like for me personally, like the people that I work with and I've worked with for a long time, we have a little bit of shorthand, and there's a lot of we enjoy like throwing the little ball back and forth and trying new stuff, and that might be the way that they don't sound very exploratory, but they might be They might have a really good shorthand, and it might make things a lot easier because three song. It sounds like a fucking nightmare to me, dude. Like
have three songwriters in the same
have
band.
Three songwriters because every songwriter has their own individual idea. That's true.
Look at Fleetwood Mac. Like they brought in like they had what four songwriters.
But you're talking about two of the greatest bands in the history of 20th century music.
Just,
I'm saying in general, and
it's the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah,
something like that
possibly. I don't know. I guess I'm thinking about it from like a personal perspective. Like what a fucking nightmare that would be. But
just from having worked with bands, like most of the time, there's one dominant personality who is the guy who like writes the bands. Oftentimes, is the singer, and everybody else just kind of takes a back seat to that one person. And so it's kind of fascinating to see.
Right, you have the arrangement crew, and then you have like the person that brings in like you know the songs. But having said that, and what I was saying before, like, you know, you brought up the Beatles or Fleetwood Mac, like, I mean, that's an interesting, that whole, like, it might be just an example of that. Maybe that was part of the paradigm at that point, like engendered by the Beatles being that successful with that many good, great songwriters in their band, like feeling their stuff out. I mean, you don't take away from, like, you got to, like, look at that, like, both of those bands that you brought up, like, the fact that they were very generous with others' ideas, you know?
Sure. It's, like, yeah, no, you have to, like, at some point take that ball and run with it and trust that songwriter's instincts or whatever. You saw they fired Lindsey Buckingham, right?
I thought he quit.
We talked about that.
Maybe he quit. Yeah.
He's out of the band.
Did we already talk about it on Mike?
Yes,
we did.
And they replaced with two pretty accomplished dudes. The lead guitarist from Tom Petty's band and
Mike
Neil
Campbell
Finn.
And Neil Finn. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
That's totally weird. I don't know that we have talked about that.
I think we did.
Yeah, we did.
Anyway, all right, well, let's do one more of these. Shane, do you want to do Say No?
Yeah, I'd love to. I think it's a really interesting left turn from most of the rest of the record, and it's a pretty beautiful song.
All right, let's play it.
Say no, I know you're gonna stay.
You know, I'm really. It sucks that we didn't do that on air.
That we didn't record our Chewbacca impressions.
Because I mean, it was basically like
he was in the room with Harrison Ford.
Yeah,
it's like a highlight reel.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, it can't be now because we didn't record it. Yeah. So thanks, producer Mark.
That's like theater of the mind, everybody.
Well, it's fun. Anyway, like that's a good song.
I love that song. I think it's beautiful.
I do think it's a little bit ruined
Beatles?
For me. Well, Elliot Smith.
By extension,
the Beatles. And like solid tune, and like kind of Elliot Smithy.
Okay, but this came out like a couple
before he was super popular. I get that, but I now
you are so goddamn set in your ways, man.
It's true, and it's fine.
It is fine.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing it out.
Well, thank you. I had no idea.
One thing that we haven't talked about, and Shane, you're usually the guy that brings stuff like this up. Like, Teenage Fan Club didn't start out as a band that as melodic as they ended up.
Yeah, they were a lot more
abrasive.
Atonal, abrasive, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm always curious, too. It's like, and they don't really talk about what had, like, what happened? I mean, a little bit of it sounds like that was just kind of the difference between what was in the water when they started recording together and then as they move forward. Like,
I think it's also like when somebody starts in a band really young, like Pulp is a good example. I mean, like, they were together.
Yeah, they're like, just figuring things out.
Yeah, they were together like from when they were 16 until they were in their 30s, and then they had their first hit. If you go back and listen to their old stuff, it, you know, it sounds nothing like the Britpop era. But there are a lot of bands like that too, you know, like really young and then just put out a couple albums, and then they become the band that sounds like what everybody knows.
The iconic thing that, you know, is their trademark. But yeah, cool tune.
I love that song. I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah, and I think in general, like, it is kind of fun to see what's the other side of the coin look like.
So right, and it helps, like, break the record up a little bit too. I mean, in my opinion, it's too bad it's so far down in the track listing. Like, if they had thrown that halfway through the record, it really would have broken things up just a little bit. So you can have a palate cleanser.
I feel like for all the talk we do about sequencing, like, it's pretty important. Like, when it works, it really makes a difference. Cool. Well, who's got the last one?
I certainly do.
This week. Yeah. Okay.
Produce a Mark. We should have like a theme song like for him.
Don't get greedy. He already like co-opted some of your off the cuff singing.
I think
that's true.
I think
production.
He's doing
that's
it on
true.
Purpose now, just
I'm,
to hope
I'm,
that
I'm
it'll
just gonna do it
be
now.
A thread.
Yeah. He's just putting me to the test, hasn't he?
Yeah.
All right. So the band Interpol has some new material, and we are gonna check out this new single, "If You Really Love Nothing."
Just like to mention that it's hard to escape the fact that Kristen Stewart has a very cavalier attitude at restaurants. She is
that was Kristen Stewart, right?
I think yes. It was. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure you're right. You're a Twilight
yes.
film star.
Yeah.
Also, I think it's kind of interesting that Interpol doesn't sound only like Joy Division anymore. Like,
good point.
It's definitely an Interpol song, but there was a little growth in that.
I know. Like, it used to be just like years
back in
yeah,
the day, like, they kind of yeah. sounded like Joy Division fronted by Michael Stipe.
I don't get the Michael Stipe part.
I know. It was pretty on the nose, Joy Division, for me. Like,
Joy
back
Division,
in the day,
yeah.
But, like, anyway.
Also,
yeah.
that video seemed to be funded by the tobacco lobby.
It was a portrait. Yeah. That video was
a lot of smoking.
It was a portrait of debauchery in a very lovely way. Yeah. Like, people were getting fucked up.
The darkness, not the band, the lighting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very dark.
It was
video.
Quite dark.
Yeah.
It was kind of a sexy video, though. I mean, I think that helped it out. Like, even with all the fucking destruction and on multiple levels, like, I don't know. Like, I liked that video.
It was well shot. Yeah,
I liked that song too.
I liked the video more than the song.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
we know each other. Well.
I know you well. That is easily my favorite Interpol song since their first record, "Turn All the Bright Lights." Like, I thought it was very, very interesting and like definitely used the same elements but in different ways. So it sort of expanded its sound a little bit, in my mind.
Yeah. No, I think I was kind of on the same page as you, Shane. I thought that it held my attention more than some of the, you know, I mean, we've been talking about an act that has had some samey elements.
I was going to say the exact word, like talk about samey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a little bit of that. So anyway, no, I thought it was cool. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, you know, sure.
Yeah, that was very enjoyable. I'll actually probably watch that video again and listen to that song again.
Who has next go around?
It's me. Right?
It's a me.
It's a me.
It's yeah. a me over a, here.
I've chosen this record of Rhino novelty songs that I
oh
you have to
God,
listen to
what
it underwater.
A great idea. I haven't even thought of that ever. Yeah. Oh shit, I'm going to file that away.
I told you that they put out an album. We've talked about this, but it's been a long time. Okay. Maybe the first year of the show, but they put out a record that was specifically designed to drive people out of your apartment if you were having a party.
Are you talking about Rhino? Like,
yeah.
God, that
yeah.
sounds great. I remember now yeah. that you're talking about yeah. that.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to go and look for some novelty records yeah, like, at some point.
Funny Bones Classics, man. I had it when I was a kid and My Ding-a-ling's on it. So file that away.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so keep this with an open mind. It's going to sound at first like I'm fucking around, but I'm not. We don't do a lot of modern, like current pop stuff. And I've heard a track off this album that I was sufficiently impressed by, or not sufficially impressed by.
You were intrigued and you wanted to explore further.
Right. And also, there's a tie-in to, Mac Miller just died, the rapper, and his ex-girlfriend, Ariana Grande, and her record, Sweetener. I heard a rec.
I actually had never heard of him until he died. And
I had neither.
And apparently, he hit number one. And so
yeah, we can hit all that stuff next week. But I want to listen to Ariana Grande's recent record, Sweetener. I heard a song recently.
I think she's engaged to Pete Davidson.
She
now.
Is. We can talk. We can unpack all that shit next week. Uh-huh. But yeah. So and we and I was like, do we ever? We never do like current pop stuff.
No.
You know, we
I'm
only
not
do, like,
generally a fan of most of that stuff.
It
but,
depends, you know, like.
But, like, dude, I've got an open mind.
There's, you know, like, I've been, I love that Janelle Monáe record that came out last year. I mean, that shit's great. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. We just don't ever bring that into this sphere. So I thought we'd try that out. So
it's Ariana Shake Grande. What's the name of the record?
Sweetener. Like the shit
Sweetener.
You put yeah. into tea.
So
you know?
is it going to be saccharin?
Maybe.
All right, we'll see.
I haven't listened to it.
All right, kids.
All right, till next time.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.